Welcome to another episode of On My Stoop with Ray. This is Ray Blankenheim, and this show is being recorded Thursday, June 12th, 2014. I wanted to go over the news of the neighborhood since our last show. We have so many wonderful things happening in this neighborhood, and I always like talking about it. One of the first things on my list is right out that Thursday night after the last show, we had WTMD's First Thursday over at Dipsky Park over at the Korean War Memorial. This was a great event. Everybody from all different neighborhoods walked and came over from Canton and Upper Fowles Point, and we all got together and we all conducted ourselves in a friendly manner, having casual drinks on the lawn while watching Lost Lonely Boys. And that was great. That was followed by Friday, and I went for a drive down Broadway Corridor. I don't know if anybody, well, you know, for those of you who listened in to last week's show, we had Victor Corbin, the president of Fowles Prospect, on. And we talked about the Broadway Corridor and our concerns about that area. So I drove by there, and I noticed that the lawns were cut since the last time I saw. The lawns along in the middle of the corridor were cut, and quite a bit of cleaning had gone on. Some glass and had broken glass, and some bottles had been picked up, and it just looked so nice. And this is what we're talking about, is that partnership with the city. You know, there's always so many things to do, but this is a great corridor, so we were glad to see that. And, of course, it's going to be very important to get everybody motivated to help with that corridor. And since then, Victor has worked with the police, and they've been responsive. And other neighbors have come along and have walked along the neighborhood, taken advantage of that wonderful Latino town that starts on Bank Street and starts a little bit before that, but heads along on Gulf Street and in that area. And we love the beautiful cantinas there. So let's all show some support. And over the weekend, it was the festival weekend. Gosh, we had the St. Leo's Italian Festival in Little Italy. We had the Greektown Festival in Greektown. We had the And on Sunday, we had that over in South Baltimore, we had the Blues and Jazz Festival. So me and my missus went over to St. Leo's for lunch, and it was wonderful. We couldn't get to all the festivals. Oh, and this weekend is the Hunt Festival. So these are all great things that are happening in Baltimore. And then, of course, on Sunday night, Friends of Patterson Park had the another band play. And they were wonderful. All the neighbors got together, and we started the week off right. So this is the wonderful thing about being in the community, is that you've got 80% of these wonderful things happening, these incredible things. And then you've got this 20% where you could actually make a difference and see what happens. Also wanted to mention last night. I had the privilege of going over to a community meeting that was located over at the Virginia Baker Rec Center in Patterson Park. Here the mayor and the commissioner and all his captains and majors that were involved in the area were there. The community relations officer who works directly with the community associations and presidents were there. Representatives from associations, residents, and they were all there, and we were all working together to address issues in our community. So we appreciate the mayor being there with the commissioner. The commissioner, the new police commissioner, is wonderful to hear him speak, and wonderful to hear him speak about the options to help our youth, but also to talk about their approach. It was almost like Willie Don Schaefer. She's picked up the style where she just kind of gets everybody involved at the time. And I don't know, you know, listeners, if you're really familiar with that type of approach, but that's what he used to do. You call up and you to him, or you would talk to him, and you would call up people right away and as you're talking to him and get people involved. The short end, we don't know what's going to happen. Also, our city councilman was there, and he's always been great in representing the neighborhoods. There are some hot spots, and we'll see what happens as we work over the months, with these folks. But this is another thing that we always wanted to talk about, how we're a family, how we respond to situations. We're not always going to be there 24/7, but when there is a community crisis or there are issues in the community, people are there to help. I met the Hispanic liaison for the mayor. Her name was Catalina Rodriguez, and she was a very engaged woman concerned about our Latino neighborhoods, and they're working actively to help. So we're going to be working with them on, I promised Victor Corbin, president of False Prospect, that we're going to be, working with him on those issues along the Broadway, but we're also going to be, checking out the rest of the neighborhood and reporting on the progress of these things. But very engaged woman, along with Lindsay Jackson, who's the mayor's liaison officer, the Office of Neighborhoods. And he coordinates, concerns that are happening within the Southeast. And he's a very engaged young man, very hardworking. So it's good to be in Baltimore and working with these folks, because we do have that 20% urban degradation. And also they talked about community policing, which was right on. We have to be the eyes and ears of the community, and we had to work with the police on those things. But, as we do these things, there are all sides to community activities, positive and negative. There are things that we feel highly spirited about, the call to action. One of the things when I used to be involved so many years ago, I was talking to today's guest. We wanted to welcome is prominent. Well, I say prominent, but she's very humble about these things. Is Lisa Schenkel. She's the Style Magazine dog blogger and animal rights advocate. I was talking to her about, some of the things we encountered way back then with, we had some houses where they were raising pit bulls. And this is not what this neighborhood's about. This neighborhood's more about, we got a lot of dogs and, and it's wonderful to see. But and now, all these folks moved in and animals, and they do help rescue animals. But back then it was the pit bulls. And also the more tragic thing, and this is years and years ago, so I don't even like talking about this stuff anymore, but I was curious if this stuff was happening more on a larger scale in other neighborhoods and in Maryland, which is, the cats used to disappear because they were kind of, they were used for bait and stuff, terrible things like this. I wanted to talk about being a animal advocate. So me and my missus have rescued four cats in the neighborhood. Every spring they come, and that's the pleasure of, because these are our children, and they are the best animals. So we love them, and so over the winter, let me tell you how I met you, Lisa. I mean, we've known each other for a while, but I first really became aware of you were involved in this issue because we went to that event that you helped organize. That's over right. The winter. Mm-hmm. And then I noticed you were always posting things about animals. And I was like, you must be really into it. So we started talking about it. And we also started talking about the groups that you are helping with and, the work that they did. So I wanted to get you on, talking a broad context about what's going on in Maryland, with these things. Because as I said, I'm kind of Rip Van Winkle. I'm really not familiar with what's happening these days. So,
well, there's a lot going on, and I really appreciate you, Ray, inviting me on Baltimore Internet Radio. And I'm just really happy to be here to talk about various issues relating to shelter pets, rescue groups, and legislation in broad brushstrokes. I I guess people should know also that I do have a dog blog. It's called Ferocious, F-U-R-O-C-I-O-U-S. It's with Style Magazine. It's at BaltimoreStyle.com, and you look under blogs, and you'll see my blog, and you'll see my two dogs. And so a lot of the issues that are important to the rescue community or dog owners in general, and I say dog owners because that's really kind of my expertise versus cats, although I like cats too. So we talk about some of those issues in my blog as well.
Yeah, and I said I was going to be the cat dad guy today because I'm cat daddy. and I said, well, great, let's talk about dogs, you know, because this is
I love
so
cat
important.
Daddy, though. That sounds like a great jazz name. Cat daddy.
Cool.
Right?
You know, and I play harmonica, so.
Well, you know, I think one of the things that we might have wanted to talk about, and I don't want to rush ahead, I'd like to just sort of, you know, run right into it. Since we're in Baltimore City, I'd like to talk first about the Baltimore Animal and Rescue and Care Shelter, which is in Baltimore City. A lot of people know it, of course, as Barks. Barks takes in approximately 12,000 animals a year. It's mandated to take in animals. This is a lot. I'm going to start with this. There's a great misconception about shelters. In fact, I don't like the word shelter because I think people think that that's a happy place to take your dog when you are finished with your dog or your cat. And it isn't. Shelters that are run by municipalities or counties are mandated to take in animals. And this also includes wild animals. They're not together, mind you, but it's usually animal care and control. And so what happens is there's a limited amount of space in places like Barks and other shelters that are run by, as I said, municipalities or counties. They're mandated to take in strays. So if somebody calls and complains about a dog running around the street, they will pick the dog up. They will put the dog or the cat on what's called a stray hold, and they will hold the dog for, you know, it depends. It could be 3 to 5 days in hopes that the owner will come to the shelter and see the dog or go on the website and see the photo of the dog or the cat. But if no one comes to pick it up, then that dog or cat is at risk of euthanasia.
Oh, so sad. Only 3 or 4 days.
3 or 4 days. But I'll tell you something and I don't want to ruin your day, Ray.
No,
even sadder is that very often people who there are myriad reasons why someone wouldn't be able to take care of their dog or cat any longer, or wouldn't want them any longer. There are some great reasons, and there are some really lousy excuses. The people who actually turn in their own animals, those animals are not put on a stray hold because they know for a fact the owner isn't coming for them. So they would be first on the list to be put down if they can't adopt them out quickly or if a rescue organization doesn't come for them. And some of the reasons that people, you know, I use the word dump because I get angry about it. But, you know, the economy, this really started, it's been going on for decades, but it really started most recently in waves back in 2008 when we were first experiencing the economy was kind of taking a dip. So we noticed that a lot of pet owners the shelters were starting to get over full, like very quickly. And there were articles in the newspaper about even Meals on Wheels. They were delivering meals to their clients who needed to eat, and those people couldn't afford dog food or cat food, so they were giving them part of their meals. So back in 2008, Meals on Wheels decided to do a drive for dog food and cat food, and then they would deliver to their clients. So anyway, it started back in 2008, and then animals started going to shelters in droves. So shelters have a big need. 12,000 around is what Barks does. But Barks has a great reputation for working with rescue organizations, so that's the great news. One of those organizations is called Rescue Well. They don't have a website, but I would love everybody who's on Facebook, doesn't matter where you live, to go to their Facebook page, which is very simply Rescue Well. This is run by an amazing woman by the name of Christine Sandberg, who does this. It's all her passion. She has a full-time job doing other things, but she and her husband work with especially bully breeds, but they'll work with anybody. And they come into Baltimore City. I will say their work is along the D.C. to Baltimore corridor, so they're very helpful with families who might have an animal that they can't keep any longer for economic reasons, mm-hmm. or because maybe they were kicked out of their rental because maybe they have a pit bull. So they help that, and they also help families. So, you know, there are great organizations out there.
Yeah, I mean, the Rescue Well, was that one of the organizations that was represented at the event?
That was the organization, yes. Okay, it was a fundraiser for them.
They seem very motivated, and they seem like they're right on the front line there. Going out there, mm-hmm. kind of doing some real pioneering stuff.
Yeah, they're great. They actually will go into – see, they're the big thing – I actually, before I came to this interview, Christine was one of the people that I requested information from. And, you know, one of the biggest issues that the organization faces is a lack of resources, particularly in Baltimore City.
Okay.
Pet owners, if they don't drive, there's no access really to great veterinary care, any kind of training – and healthier or more cost-effective food options. So she calls these places deserts, where people have dogs and cats, but they don't have access to the kind of care, affordable care, that they might need for their animals. So they go into the community, and they actually, I mean, kudos to Christine and her team, because they go right in, and they'll, if they see an animal in a yard that doesn't have proper shelter, that might have a heavy chain on it, or no water, they will actually go up and they will work with the family that owns the dog, if the people want to keep the dog, and help educate them. And it's a very personal way of trying to attack this situation of, basically community ignorance. You know, how do I take care of my dog? How do I take care of my cat?
So what neighborhoods are they working in? Do they just kind of... I mean, how do they focus?
You know, I don't know, because they're not very public about that.
Okay.
But they, you know, I'm assuming that they probably go a lot to West Baltimore, into the areas where there may even be some dog rings where they try to, you know, help.
Just like my old area, we used to have those years and years ago. We had some of those things going on.
Well, and it's, you know, it's still going on.
Right, sure.
You know, I think in Anne Arundel County as well, we're finding more. And years ago, you know, Prince George's County had a problem with this. And I think it was in 1997. I could be wrong about the year. They actually banned pit bulls in Prince George's County, and it was mostly due to the fighting rings, because they just presumed that most of these dogs would be vicious, which isn't really true. But
they're wonderful animals.
Yeah, so they really are.
How did that work out in PG County?
Well,
do you know?
It's costing them an awful lot of money. What happens, and it also makes for problems, because sometimes there'll be a stray and it'll be a pit bull, and then the PG County Animal Shelter will take it in. But because they have that, it's called BSL, breed specific legislation, because they have that anti-pit bull legislation in Prince George's County, they're not permitted by law to adopt out the pit bull. So the pit bull would have to actually be rescued by an organization, or it would be euthanized. So is it working? You know, personally, I don't think it's working. I think it's costing them an awful lot of money, and I don't think it's really helped to educate anyone. And I think anytime you make something illegal, there's a black market for it, and that just makes the price go up.
Oh my gosh, right.
So.
Wow. Something to think about, definitely.
Absolutely.
Is there any type of leadership coming along on these types of things from Annapolis? I don't mean to put you on the spot, because I know we didn't really...
Oh, no, that's great. Actually, one of the things that a lot of people might not know about is pit bull owners now have a little bit to celebrate, because if you remember, I think it was about 2 years ago, there was a ruling on the bench in Baltimore City. And you know that in the United States of America, we don't make legislation from the bench. But unfortunately, this is something that was akin to that. There was a court case that was being heard where a child was mauled by a pit bull in the neighborhood. There was a ruling from the bench that allows for dog bite victims to litigate specifically against dog owners and their landlords, where applicable, based solely on the presumption of the dog's physical characteristics. So you'd have to say that if you were a renter and your landlord knew that you had a dog and it was presumed to be a pit bull, and this landlord might know that it might have a history of aggressive behavior, and sometimes even if it didn't have a history of aggressive behavior, if something happened with that dog where it might have bite a child or a mailman or something, this ruling from the bench gave the litigant the ability to also sue the landlord, not just the dog owner. Well, as you can imagine, since that was the ruling that the judge gave, in all over the state of Maryland, people who own pit bulls were being told, you need to leave your apartment or your home, or you need to get rid of your dog. Well, now our shelters are getting full again.
Oh, gosh.
With pit bulls that aren't welcome there because of this stupid ruling, which really wasn't law.
Right.
But it was enough. It predicated the ability for people to begin suing landlords who don't want this problem.
Uh-huh.
Well, the great news is this past April,
we got some good news here.
We've been working with the Maryland State Legislature for a couple of years now, and they finally ruled, and they basically overruled this law. So now landlords are not able to be sued. In fact, they passed what's called breed neutral legislation that will undo the court's ruling. And the bills were Senate Bill 247 and House Bill 73. It will hold all dog owners liable for their dogs, regardless of their breed, and gives them the chance to defend their dogs in court in the event that they do injure someone. And it also removes the strict liability from landlords and other third parties. That's really, really important for renters, especially. So it's a move forward, and hopefully landlords will get the message that they're safe. So that's a good thing.
I mean, really, isn't the issue just kind of, finding in our neighborhood, we identified these places that just had a lot of animals, around.
Mm-hmm.
So you go after the kennel, right?
Sure. You go after the backyard breeder because they're probably breeding dogs for fighting rings or for bait dogs.
Right.
Exactly right. I mean, that's a more precise way of doing it instead of creating this breed-specific legislation or rulings that, I have to tell you, I've been bitten by 3 dogs. And none of whom were pit bulls. I was bitten by a dachshund. That was a nasty little dachshund, and it really hurt. And nasty little dog too. I was attacked by a German shepherd that barely missed, really chomping on my thigh. And I was just walking toward its owner. It was actually chained up, but it leapt at me just when it saw me coming. And I was really a good 4 or 5 feet away. And then the other one was my fault because I was visiting a shelter and I stuck my hand. I said, oh, a terrier. I stick my hand without thinking about letting the dog sniff my hand first. And he took a little chomp out of my finger. But that one was totally my responsibility. So, and I think, I don't want to just keep running on, Ray. I know you have questions for me, but
no,
I think
I don't mind.
Education, one of the things Christina and I have talked about and one of the things that I have mentioned in my dog blog is that education is a huge issue. It's an issue with regard to first of all, with dog owners, access to where they can get, reduced cost spay and neuter programs. Where can they get microchipping? So, I mean, that's such a common thing now. So many people don't get their dogs and cats microchipped, and they should. It's such an easy way to do it, and then register your dog, and then if it's lost, they can find you immediately, and then,
Are there available low-cost neutering programs?
Absolutely.
I mean, there used to be Snap, right? And I keep talking about Snap. That was like 20 years ago something, but...
Yeah, I don't know much about Snap, and I didn't bring.
But I don't know. I don't think it's around anymore.
Well, it may not be, but you know what? I did some research about a year ago on spay and neuter programs that were available, and I did it just on Maryland, and from Silver Spring on up to Baltimore into various counties, there are all kinds of reduced. You don't have to go to your vet to do it. Obviously, you want somebody who's a credible. Physician who's going to be working on your animal, but they have really reduced rates.
Reduced rates.
Yeah. So I mean, if you just look it up.
Strays.
Yeah. Well, what happened? Well, I was going to say if for anybody who owns their animal.
Okay.
If you own your animal, but you're on a real budget and you can't really afford the $200 or the $400 that your vet wants to charge.
Yeah.
Go online. I mean, and internet's accessible everywhere, including libraries. Just go online and look up reduced cost spay and neuter programs, and you're going to find them in your neighborhoods. They do exist. And so anyway.
Wow, that's great.
It's great to know. Yeah.
People don't know that.
They probably don't, and they need to because that's one of the biggest contributors to the population of animals on the streets.
This is a Maryland program.
Yes. I mean, every state has their own, and Maryland isn't, it's not a sanctioned program, but what I'm saying is that these clinics all over Maryland. They're not necessarily even under a unified umbrella, but they're just individual clinics. So
that offer these reduced.
Exactly.
Okay.
And they're various prices along. So, you know, I would just suggest that people look and see what could fit into their budget. There was a piece of legislation about 2 years ago. They were talking about having a free spay and neuter program that was sponsored by the state of Maryland. It was going to be supported by a tax on – a third tax on pet food. And I'm not sure if it passed or not. I can't remember. But that was one of the things they were going to talk about. And so anyway, education across the board. I mean, we need our dog and cat owners to be a little bit more educated about how to spay and neuter, how to microchip, access to better veterinary care.
Okay, so let's talk about the microchipping part a bit. Are there programs available for – microchipping? Or I mean, that sounds like a expensive proposition.
It's really not. I mean, I think, I can't remember what we paid for our dogs. We had it done through our vet.
Okay.
But I mean, some places it's $20.
$20.
You know,
wow.
I mean,
okay,
you know,
nothing.
You can, I mean, you just have to, again, it's research and taking.
Not that $20 is nothing, but, you know, when it comes to security of your animal, right?
That's absolutely right.
Peace of mind.
And there are probably some free microchipping programs. I mean, just check the shelters in your area, wherever you live, because sometimes they have those clinics. I mean, I live in Anne Arundel County, just outside the city, about 3 miles. And the
City of Annapolis.
City of Baltimore.
Oh, okay.
And the Anne Arundel Animal Control has clinics like every Thursday, and I'm not sure I can't remember now if they I think they're microchipping clinics, and anybody can go. It's like $5 or something like that. It's crazy cheap.
Wow!
So if you can get yourself there, you can have it done, and boom, and then all you have to do is register your dog or cat online, and that information will be there forever. So it's educating people, and which leads me to another thing. You know, one of the things that you and I talked about before we started was police on dog violence.
Okay, yeah.
You know,
right.
And
something I never really think about, but I hear from time to time about.
Right, and a lot of people don't know unless you hear about it on the nightly news or read about it on Facebook or on the internet somewhere, but. It seems to me now either we're hearing more about it and therefore it seems like there's an increase. I'm not sure which is true, or there really is an increase in this police on dog violence. I grew up in a law enforcement family. So, you know, I know that police officers really put their lives on the line every day. And the last thing you want is to be mauled, possibly killed, attacked in any way by any dog or animal that you come in contact with. But it's unfortunate because I think what's happened, and the reason that I even bring it up is it's part of this whole education about people interacting with animals. I do think that there are probably – I mean, why wouldn't there be a police officer who might have been bitten as a kid? It's entirely possible. So now, you know, he doesn't have a dog in his home. He doesn't want his kids to have a dog because he has a latent fear of them. Well, you know, if you're going to be on a police force, there's a possibility that you're going to encounter an animal. Especially could be a Rottweiler, a German Shepherd, a Pit Bull. And these dogs all, I mean, many of the ones that I know who are pets have wonderful temperaments. And
yeah, they're responding to emergency situation just like you would expect them to.
Exactly. And when you know, a thing that people don't understand is that when you enter especially a dog, I mean, when you enter a dog's yard, that's their territory. And it doesn't matter who you are. I mean, if you're a kid walking into the gate or you're a police officer, that dog does not have the ability to discern. He just knows that you're a stranger. I've never smelled you before. I don't recognize you, and you're in my yard. And that doesn't give the dog a license to attack. But, of course, the dog's going to run up, sniff, maybe bark. And in some instances, there have been these it's just sad cases where officers just immediately reach for their gun and kill the animal. We had this happen here in Baltimore City, but it's happened in Austin, Texas, and in Colorado, and places. There's stories everywhere. And the other thing, I'm skipping around, but I wanted to talk about this. One of my biggest pet peeves is people who go to a shelter or go to a pet store or a rescue organization and don't educate themselves, again, this word education, about what breed of dog will do best in their family environment. There are dogs that do not do well with children.
Okay.
You would be surprised to know that sometimes those dogs are not large dogs. Those dogs are sometimes dogs like terriers. I happen to have two terriers, and they work really well in my family. They're medium energy. They have a lot of energy. They're really bright. But technically speaking, Scottish Terriers and West Highland Terriers are usually told by rescue groups and breeders that they probably shouldn't be in a household where there's a child under 7 or 6. You know, kids have learning their motor skills. They grab at dogs. You know, they grab their ears. They pinch. They pull. My Scotty, a 3-year-old, put her finger right in his eye, and I saw it. And bless his heart, you know, my dog, you know, he was older. I mean, if he'd been a puppy, he probably would have bit her. But he gave her a little warning, you know, like he just sort of looked at her sternly and basically said, take your finger out of my eye, please. But I could tell, so I had to separate him from that situation because I didn't – obviously, she's 3. She doesn't know what she's doing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you have to ask yourself questions. Are you going to want to take your dog traveling with you? If you do and you do a lot of plane flights, you're probably going to want to have a dog you can carry on board with you. So you need to investigate dogs that are 20 pounds or under, because that's really the only way you're going to do that unless you put them in cargo. And you really don't want to do that because a lot of dogs die in the cargo hold. People don't know that. If you're not particularly athletic, probably better to get a Shih Tzu, because neither are they. You know, so you don't want to get a Rhodesian Ridgeback if you're not a runner or, you know, Border Collie. So
I guess you want to get a dog like yourself, you know.
But exactly, that fits your lifestyle, that doesn't mind being alone. And so, and the reason I say that, Ray, is because what happens is a lot of people will adopt these dogs either from a shelter, from a rescue group, or they'll go and buy them, and they don't fit their lifestyle, and boom, now they're in a shelter. And that happens because people say, I don't have time for this dog. This dog requires too much exercise.
I think what happens lots of times in this neighborhood is they hire a dog watcher at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And the dog watcher comes in and walks them around. I see it all the time with people in this neighborhood. You know, I think they don't realize how much of an effort it's going to take.
But I applaud that, because that's great that they're at least investing in, you know, and thinking about the dog while they're away at work.
Yes.
You know?
Been a big thing in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, it's great. And I love that. And that's a real big, that's a great business for people too. You know, you get yourself bonded and insured and go out there and offer those services because people need it, you know?
Right. So let's talk about, let's try to sum some of the things up before we move on to some additional topics.
Okay.
Work maybe with your community association or rescue well, right?
Yeah, I mean, there are
to identify
needs
that, you know, where animals are at risk, mm-hmm. Are at fault.
Right.
Get maybe the local animal inspector in from the city if you think there's an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot you can do. I mean, identify the rescue groups in your area. And Rescue Well just happens to be one that works with a lot of bully breeds, but we'll work with all breeds of animals.
You know what? Instead of getting yourself become the object of, you know, let's say scorned by your neighbors or, you know, in a dangerous situation, mm-hmm. let these folks help you to, you know, alleviate the situation. You could help them by volunteering.
Absolutely. Right? Volunteering.
You know, maybe then you could get involved with some other cases where mm-hmm. you're not so directly involved.
Right. Well, that's absolutely right. I mean, I know organizations like Rescue Well need fosters. They need adopters. They also will help people with the skills of knowing how to train their dog. I mean, if you're having dog problems and you want to keep your dog, they will actually, that's a great resource for teaching the dog how to behave and commands and all of that. So, the resources are out there. People just need to be more aware of them.
Right. And you've got to be patient with your animals. I mean, I know, you know, we've got this big Norwegian cat.
Mm-hmm.
Norwegian Forest cat, and he's like, you know, I call him a Vikings cat because the thing is, he's meant to be on top of everything, overlooking the Viking ship and hunting for whatever, and being, you know,
That's cool.
And you know, he's got issues, you know, some potty train issues and whatnot, and
well,
you know,
sure.
unless we could have been less patient with him, and also he was having a hard time. Becoming a member of the family for a while, mm-hmm. you know, and these are all behavioral issues. So my wife is constantly going on the web and saying, you know, what's wrong, you know? Mm-hmm. And I tried to take that approach too, where it's like, okay, they're unhappy about something. This is why they're doing this. That's let's not punish them. Let's, you know, let's work and see what we could do. So, you know, maybe, you know, maybe that's part of the answer too.
It is, absolutely. You know. That's why you're one of the good guys, Ray. Because you take the time to do that. A lot of people don't think like that.
I'm not that great of a guy, but anyway.
Well, I had some good news to share, if I have time.
We have time.
Do we have time?
Yeah.
I wanted to remind people about a couple of, well, certainly one program. About 3 or 4 years ago, there is a very well-known floral shop in Baltimore County, but it services the entire region, really. It's called Flowers and Fancies, run by Eddie Wingrat. I mention them because they came up with this concept of creating puppy bouquets. And basically what and they're great. You have to go on the website and look at them. And of course, I did a blog on that as well. And what happens is it's like the bouquet that gives twice. If you can order a bouquet that looks like a dog, you can even give them a specific kind of dog, like send them a picture of the dog. And let's say you're sending something to someone in a nursing home, or they've had a broken leg and they're in a hospital, it's an anniversary, then they get this puppy bouquet. They're just adorable. And then Flowers and Fancies does them at cost. And whatever the cost is, I think it's – I don't know if it's quite 20%, but there's a percentage that can be donated to the Baltimore Humane Society. So I call it the gift that gives twice. Okay. So – and there's a little card that is enclosed with the bouquet that tells the recipient that a donation has been made in their name to the Baltimore Humane Society. So they get the bouquet and they get the knowledge of knowing that some money – and Baltimore Humane Society loves this. So that's really working out well for them. I wanted to give a shout out here in Baltimore City. Robert McClintock is kind of an iconic artist. Well, I wanted to mention him because, you know, these are good examples of people in the community who are actually doing things for animals. Robert McClintock, owns this gallery in Fells Point. It's the Robert McClintock Studio and Gallery. Most recently had a fundraiser. He was doing this for a book author named Ellen Gilman, who has written a book called Molly's Tale. And it's a book about her rescue dog, who was a Sheltie. And she basically rescued this dog back in 1986 before rescue was even a term. And she's been rescuing Shelties ever since then. And so this was a Sheltie rescue. And it's funny for Robert because he has a pit bull and he's usually more well-known in the pit bull community.
Right.
Well, Robert opened up his gallery for free and let the Sheltie rescue come in. And we raised some money for Sheltie Rescue. And I'm using him as an example because this is what business Sheltie owners rescue in the community can do to help, you know, to help animals. And then the last really good news thing that I have hasn't even been announced yet, but by the time this show airs, it will be. The Humane Society of Carroll County is has acquired a brand new mobile adoption unit, which is going to be the ribbon is going to be cut on it in Westminster on Saturday the 14th at 10 a.m. And it's fantastic. It's basically a $50,000 unit, and there's probably nothing else like it in the region. It's going to be it can take 14 pets out to be seen anywhere basically in Carroll County.
Wow, what a great idea.
It's fantastic, and it's going to be really cheerful. They're wrapping the trailer, and Scientific Plant Services is donating the truck that's going to be pulling it. They're going to need a lot of volunteers, but this is even better news. Once Carroll County gets this off the ground, they've told me that they are going to basically offer this also to surrounding counties.
Wow.
So they want to bring it to Baltimore City and Baltimore County and Anne Arundel County. You know, they say they've got it. You know, they are anticipating they're going to just be moving these animals out to great homes, and they want to be able to help their neighbors in other counties too. And I think that's great.
That is such a good idea because, you know, one of the things about going to the animal shelters, and we want to encourage people to go to the animal shelters.
Absolutely.
I think that's one of the solutions we're talking about. Mm-hmm. But is to get that thing out there and with the kids and, you know, over the weekends to where they are, maybe at the parks or mm-hmm. what at the stores and,
Sure.
You know, I remember going to the store when I was a kid in Bowie and over to one of the local shopping centers, and the lady had kittens there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't remember if it was for sale or whatever. Right there, you get hooked.
Right.
You know,
right.
And then, you know, the kids give the moms and dads that look, and before you know, and then that's going to be the happiest home.
Yeah, I think so too.
And that's great.
So. Happy really to share happy. That information with
That's
folks.
That's great. So, That's fantastic, you know. And some other solutions, right? It's being a great Maryland resident because we do have inexpensive options to neuter our animals as well as to, you know, chip our animals, computer chip our animals so they get lost. So, you know, all these things combined. Hopefully we'll start turning the tail. Also, I mean, do the animal shelters need volunteers or?
Animal shelters can always use volunteers for everything from playing with the animals, giving them exercise to feeding to cleaning things out to even posting things on Facebook, you know. Very often they need photographers to come in and take pictures of the animals. There are all kinds of things. You can do it, you know, once you get approved as a volunteer, you know, you fill out a little application because, of course, they want to screen everybody and interview you. But as soon as that's done, you know, you can work with them on picking their times and availabilities. They can also use donations, just monetary donations, but donations of sheets and towels and pillows, dog food, cat food, litter. All of those things. So, you know, if you're in the grocery store and you want to pick up an extra bag of cat litter while you're there and then drop it off at your local shelter, my goodness, they can use all that stuff.
I mean, you don't have to go nuts. Just maybe like one or two nights a week or a couple hours a week.
Absolutely.
You know,
even once a week. I mean, they love
it. Right.
Absolutely. Donation supplies, fosters.
Okay.
I mean, you know, if you have sign up with a rescue to be a foster because – you know, if you don't want a long-term commitment with a dog, maybe you foster for several weeks or, you know, however long it takes. And you're saving a life.
Huh.
You're basically saving a life.
Would that be involved in just kind of taking care of them for a while?
Sure. You have them in your home.
Okay.
And some fosters actually, some fosters are just basically, you know, great babysitters. But then there are other ones who actually know a lot about training. There are some fosters who will take, say, kittens. Let's say if the kitten's mother dies and it needs to be bottle fed. I mean, sometimes organizations look for people who know how to bottle feed kittens before they can be set out to be adopted. I mean, they may only be 3 weeks old and maybe they only need to keep them until they're 12 weeks old.
This is something else Rescue Well does.
Everybody does this.
Everybody does
this. So, you know, check with your local rescue organizations in your neighborhood because everybody's looking for help.
Okay. You know? Wow. Okay, well, do you have any information that you'd like to give for us, like specific URLs or anything?
You know, I just want to thank you so much for having me on and for being able to talk about all this. Certainly, you know, Rescue Well will be having their website up soon, but for right now, it's just a Facebook page.
All right, well, that's fine.
You know, and then there's the Baltimore Animal Rescue and Care Shelter in Baltimore City. You know, I should give a shout out to my own county, Anne Arundel County, SPCA. The reason I do this is because a lot of people don't realize the Anne Arundel County SPCA may be unlike a lot of other SPCAs, around our neighborhoods, actually takes in dogs from other areas. Like when, there was Katrina, I think they took in about 45 dogs from Katrina down in Louisiana. The dogs came up and they accepted them. They don't want to see these dogs have to be put down. A lot of them were separated by their owners. So a lot of times when there are tornadoes out in the Midwest, Anne Arundel County SPCA works with local rescue groups on the ground in those states that have been affected by those natural disasters, and they will take those animals in. So I want to give them a shout out too, because you're doing a good thing, you know.
That's great. I mean, is there some sort of leadership from up top that we should acknowledge? I mean, the state, from the state side, or, you know, that's providing that extra?
No, I think it's just, you know, the SPCA of Anne Arundel County. And, you know, I just want to tell people that when you donate to the SPCA National, you're not donating to your local shelter. So please know that. It is same with the Humane Society. Please donate locally and directly. I don't have anything against the SPCA, ASPCA, or the Humane Society of the United States, but they're primarily a governmental affairs and legislative arm, so all their money goes into that. It doesn't, they don't even give donations to local chapters. So if you're going to donate, donate locally. That's where it really does the best long-term effect.
And we could also ask our church members, being people of conscience.
Yeah, I agree with that. Sunday adoptions. Can you imagine that after you leave? You know?
Yes.
Hear a little bit from the pulpit, pulpit to pup.
Right. Well, it sounds like we're making some progress, but we still got some ways to go. And we got people like Robert McClintock and, you know, leaders in that nature,
philanthropists.
Okay, God, why did I try to say that word on the air?
It's a tough one.
Right. So, but I think we're okay. And you know what? We want you to come back. If you'd like to come back and talk about this issue, maybe we can bring some other folks back.
I'd love it.
I'd love to have you back on my stoop. And if you want to get involved in in Baltimore Internet Radio, I know you're excited about it as a community driven. Yeah. But, also telling a lot of good stories in the area about business, about people working together and capturing what Maryland and Baltimore are all about, and also trying to give an example, if people are in a jam in the rest of the country, maybe we could offer a little bit of a voice on what to do. So we really appreciate you coming today to help with that mission.
Sure. Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, so thanks, folks, for listening in to another episode of On My Stoop with Ray. Next week, we'll come back with someone else, perhaps on the environment. I'm going to get some of those folks on, some political stuff going. As always, that's always good. We always want to capture that neighborhood virtually, so that's what we're going to try to do here on this show, along with Baltimore Internet Radio. So, and once again, I wanted to thank our guest today, Lisa Schenkel, Style Magazine dog blogger and animal advocate.